Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Right now, from Forbes.com, a former great writer here in San Diego, baseball guru, and joining us here on the SDCCU fan hotline, Mr. Barry Bloom on Gwynn and Chris. How are you, Barry? Nice to hear your voice again, sir.
Hey, Chrissy, I'm going to need to hire you to do my intros everywhere.
Not bad, huh?
Not bad.
I wrote that out earlier this afternoon because I knew you were coming on.
I like the guru part.
The guru part, yes. Well, tell us from a guru perspective your thoughts now watching Fernando Tatis Jr. at the major league level. We certainly heard so much about him. Has he lived up to the hype so far?
I'm not sure there was that much hype. I mean, it was sort of like, let's wait and see about this kid. He's 20 years old. He seems like he has the tools, and he showed it a bit in spring training. He showed it on a limited basis in the minor leagues. You know, my experience with him up until, this year was a terrible game. He played for the Tin Cups down in Fort Wayne when I was there. A minor league game that AJ had organized about 2 years ago at the end of the season, in which he looked great. Some spring training and the Futures game last year, in which he also looked great. I mean, I was all for, and I think the last time we talked, it was in January when I wrote the column about get some more players, get Tatis to the major leagues, and the Padres should make a run at it this year because the division is kind of wide open. And, I've been for him skipping AAA and seeing what he can do in the major leagues, and it's been fun. I mean, really, with Manny and him on the left side of the infield, that might be the best left side of the infield the Padres ever had.
Barry, I don't know where you were at, but there was certainly a whole lot of hype here in San Diego as it pertained to Tatis Jr. Last year, you and I had a discussion. You had just recently wrote the article on Tatis Jr. struggling at the AA level. And as you said, you saw it a couple times. From that point when you wrote the article till now, what do you see as the biggest difference in Tatis Jr.?
Well, I mean, first of all, as you know, because you've been through it yourself, I mean, playing at AAA, AA, and translating it to the big leagues is something completely different. It's a different animal. So you don't know until you get to the big leagues what you're going to do. I mean, and you're seeing it with Urias so far in the two segments he's had in the major leagues where he just came up last September before he got hurt and he was struggling at the plate. This year it was even worse. He's back down in the minor leagues. So far he hasn't been able to make the transition and he can't seem to hack it. But what I liked about Tatis from the get-go was, you know, this tremendous speed he has in that minor league game. I remember him going from first to home on a base hit, and to me, I didn't clock it, but just my own mind and eye. I mean, it was the fastest guy I've seen on the bases in the major leagues or in organized balls since Deion Sanders was a kid.
Wow.
You know, that's how fast he was. And then the other day when in that eighth inning leading off on Saturday, when he knocked the ball into the corner, and he instead of just playing it safe and taking the double, they're down by three runs, he'd be on second, nobody out, he just accelerated going around second base and didn't even think about it and went into third handling. You know, those are the kind of things to me that are really exciting, and I think even Greeny said it when I asked him about it afterwards, that it's the kind of things you can't teach a player.
That's right.
Either you have it or you don't. And having watched his dad play, you know, he's much better than his dad.
Yeah.
And then there's a brother coming too. And I asked, you know, him about it yesterday, about Elijah, who the White Sox just signed. And it's like, yeah, he's pretty good too. So, I mean, it's a great family. You know, the grandfather played down in the Dominican, never played, you know, Major League ball. Obviously, we know about his dad and him and his brother. And, you know, it's really a fantastic baseball family, and it's fortunate that the Padres were able to tap into it.
Barry Bloom, Forbes.com, SDCCU fan hotline. How perfect of a fit has it been for Fernando Tatis Jr. to have Manny Machado standing to his right? I mean, this wasn't something we were all thinking about during the offseason until, you know, out of nowhere the Padres got into the Machado running and wound up signing him. It just seems like Tatis Jr. wants to do Manny proud. I just watch him. When he makes a throw to first base, if it's not right on the money, he always turns to Machado as if to say, sorry. And it's like Manny's kind of trying to teach him a little bit about perfection and going after that. It just seems like it's really, really working out.
Well, I let's be clear about it. If the Padres don't make that effort and spend the money and sign Manny, I don't think Tatis is in the major leagues yet today.
Very good point.
I mean, this is, you know, Manny came in, and the first day Manny came in, the first game he played out in Peoria, the first thing he said was, you have to have Tatis in the major leagues when this camp is broken. And that's from the couple of weeks he was there watching the kid play while he was getting ready to play, and then playing beside him for three or four innings in one game. He was already lobbying for him. And you know that, you know, Hosmer and Manny went to management and lobbied for, you know, Tatis to make the major leagues and, you know, let's forgo the service time issue and put the best team on the field. And so I think to a certain degree, not only does, you know, Junior owe Manny for being his tutor on the field, but he owes him for what he did for him to get him to the big leagues just to begin with. So it doesn't surprise me as a 20-year-old kid that this guy who has mentored you and gone to bat for you, that everything you want to do is you want to prove to that guy, among everything else that you're doing, that, you know, you are worthy of all that support.
Barry, we real quick, got a couple minutes left. Would you take a run at Gio Gonzalez right now if you were the Padres, based on everything you've seen so far this season and where Gio is? The Yankees obviously don't seem to need him.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the thing is, the reason why I said that is that, you know, the problem with the free agents, and I wrote the pitching free agents, I wrote this about Kimbrel
Keuchel?
You know, Gio and Keuchel at the end of spring training, that if they had signed the last week of spring training, it was going to be May 1st before they even got to the major leagues. Now, for Keuchel and Kimbrel, you know, they're going to be lucky if there's somebody's pickup and they're ready at the All-Star break. And they'll be a nice pickup for the second half of the season for some team. But in Gio's case, he's now had a spring training. He's been in the minor leagues working and building up.
Yeah.
He's ready to go. So he's a perfect guy for the Padres to pick up and put in the rotation.
All right. We'll let him know you said so. We'll tell him the guru from Forbes.com, Barry Bloom, said, let's do it. Barry, thanks. What?
Tell AJ to call me. I mean,
sure.
You know,
sure.
He listens to me.
And he listens to me, too. So it's fantastic. We can get whatever we need.
Thank you, Barry.
Thanks, Barry. Good talking to you.
You're welcome, guys. See ya.
All right. Barry Bloom right there. Always great on baseball. SDCCU fan hotline. Nominate SDCCU Best Credit Union in the Union Tribune Readers Poll. That's daily at SDCCU.com/nominate. San Diego County Credit Union. It's not big bank banking. It's better.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball in full swing. NBA playoffs. Stanley Cup playoffs. And all anybody cares about is this dumb draft. Thursday night. The biggest thing on the planet. Joining us to talk about it is Kirk Morrison, our good friend from San Diego State and all-around broadcaster, writer, blogger.
You really could just close your eyes and throw a dart, and you probably hit something that he does.
He's got it all going on. Hi, Kirk. How are you, man?
I am so upset at you, Chris.
I figured. I know that. I mean, football people, the draft is the greatest thing on the sports calendar.
But before the draft, though, we do have a game 7 in hockey tomorrow night. You already know the Vegas Golden Knights versus my San Jose Sharks, the right to get to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So before the draft, I got a nice little appetizer draft Thursday.
Well, I will watch your appetizer. I don't know that I will watch the main course, though.
Kirk, I want to ask you about your other hometown team. I know the Raiders, your former team at one time as well. They got a few picks to play with here in this draft. They've had a pretty active offseason thus far. What's the talks out of that camp where they're going?
Thinking of going. Yeah, Tony. Honestly, you just got to wait till Thursday, 5 o'clock. I mean, it's, you know, the one thing that I've just always stressed to tell people, don't look at what's been going on. Don't look at who visited where. Don't look at the private workouts. Don't look at any of that, because there are different mocks and simulations that go on within each organization,
right,
in terms of how they think the draft is going to play out. And they have different scenarios. And it really just starts, like I said, at 5 o'clock on Thursday when the Arizona Cardinals, now all the talks and rumors and this is what they're going to do. We'll know when Roger Goodell walks out there on Thursday and says the Arizona Cardinals are on the clock. Once that clock starts, okay, decisions will be made. And then from there, the Raiders will have their options. And if there is a quarterback available, could they take a Kyler Murray if he doesn't go one? But if Kyler Murray does go one, I mean, what happens with Nick Bosa, Quinn Williams, you know, the guys kind of right after Josh Allen, the linebacker from Kentucky? So the Raiders are going to have their pick in terms of one of the top four talents in this draft. And then as they get down toward the bottom of the round, they still have pick 20 and 27.
Yeah.
They're going to be able to make some things happen. So, you know, for me, I really believe that they have to go defense, because that's really where this team really suffered last year. You mentioned it. They did their homework in the offseason or in free agency by, you know, trading for Antonio Brown, getting, you know, the former Charger Tyrell Williams. They signed some receivers. But I think now, for them, it's about getting this defense quarter.
Kirk Morrison, ESPN color analyst and the Athletic contributor, joining us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Kirk, real quick, I want to follow up. You mentioned the Cardinals and the different mock drafts everybody has going up in each office. Is it coincidence that as we get closer to the actual draft day, now these rumors are starting to pop up that the Cardinals aren't going that way at all? Is this put out by the team? Is it put out by the agent? Like, how do every year these rumors happen right around draft day, where all of a sudden it's going completely left of where it was going previous?
You know, Tony, I think sometimes we live in the moment and we don't think about it in years past. You remember last year, no one knew Baker Mayfield was going one overall until, I believe, tomorrow, this time last year.
Right.
Like, it was like Tuesday, and all of a sudden, Baker Mayfield number one. They were like, wait, what? I mean, there was a mock draft that had him going 16, 17. I always challenge people to do this, though, too, Tony and Chris. Check this out. What's easier, to fill out a 32 mock draft of your own and get them all right, or pick out the first 32 victories in the NCAA tournament? I would say it's harder to pick the draft 32 consecutive picks than it is to pick you know, it's easier to pick March Madness the first round because it's like, okay, I know this team and this team. We know this is Duke and Canada. When it comes to the NFL, it's like we don't know what these coaches are thinking.
Yeah.
So you may have people in the building who may say, well, we're really high on this guy, and we're really high on this guy, and we like this guy. And if you're the Cardinals, man, you know, right now, I love the intrigue. That's what makes the NFL draft, like, so special is because we literally don't know what they're going to do. They can go Murray. They cannot go Murray. Maybe they're saying it because they want some team to fall in love and come up to number one and grab Kyler Murray so they can get more picks. I mean, the NFL draft is just so fascinating every single year because, you know, things change. I mean, choices happen, but trades happen. You look at Deshaun Watson a couple of years back, same thing with Patrick Mahomes a couple of years ago. Yeah. No one had him going that high, and Kansas City trades up to get him. So I just know there's going to be some theatrics come Thursday.
All right, here's why I'm not the biggest fan of the draft. All of those things you said are very true. But one of the things, Kirk, about the draft is there's a tremendous amount of lying that's going on. And there should be. I mean, if you're the Arizona Cardinals, why should you tell anybody what you're planning to do? If you're the 49ers or the Jets, the Raiders, why should you be telling people, hey, we have our eye on this guy? So I think it's all much ado about nothing because everybody predicts what these teams are going to do by what they have said they're going to do, but the teams aren't really being truthful because they don't want to give away what they're going to do. So it is interesting to see how it all turns out, but I find it to be a little bit interesting that we all spend so much time predicting what's going to happen when we just couldn't possibly know.
Yeah, a lot of people out there do that, Chris. I'm of the few or the minority who understands that no matter what people say, until we are pushed to that deadline, when that time is starting to run out, you got to make a decision. And that's when I know, okay, this is who you do. This is what you really think. But the thing is, you go into a store, right? And we all have this list of items. Okay, we got to go get this store. And then all of a sudden you walk in, and guess what? The item that you want, they don't have it. And if they don't have it, what do you do now?
Right.
And you say, I got these other items on my list that I want to get, but you know what? You know what? I like this item best. Like, this is probably more important for our household. We couldn't get what we wanted, but let's just go with this one. I mean, that's kind of how the NFL draft kind of operates, is that you have the guys on your board. If that guy's not there, then, hey, we got to go with the next best option. And sometimes, you know, we always hear the stories of, you know, I never visited a team. I never talked to this team. They never even came up to me at the combine, yet they drafted me. So you hear all these types of stories, and it'll be fun to me to kind of look at the way that the bottom half of the draft of the first round comes out on Thursday. We know about the top guys, but there's going to be a bunch of defensive players who people are really going to get a chance to know as this draft goes along. Outside of the fantasy football player, this is a strong defensive draft.
Kirk, who do you think? Or let me ask you a different way: what are the Chargers' biggest needs going into this draft?
Oh man, for me, they can always go offensive line. That's always something to, you know, keep around Phillip Rivers.
Yeah.
Obviously, the rumor of, you know, is there a succession plan for Phillip Rivers at some point? I know they're talking about, you know, making him a lifelong Charger, getting him another deal that would take him, you know, into his 40s, but, you know, is there a situation where they could be in the, you know, the Josh Rosen sweepstakes, you know, for to be a backup and be mentored by Phillip Rivers? Defensively, they need corners, and that's not even they need corners and linebackers, maybe another interior defensive lineman as well. So they've got some needs, and it's just really what falls to them. You know, it's just that's what happens when you're a team that has success. You get to the second round of the playoffs, and, you know, you just kind of figure out, okay, what's the best available player for us? You know what I mean? Because this is a team that didn't play with Hunter Henry throughout the year. He comes back. You know, obviously Keenan's still there. So you've got, you know, Melvin Gordon's still there. So you've got an offense that you feel really good about. So adding an offensive lineman and in defense for them, like I said, corner, you know, you did well last year in drafting Derwin James, and I think maybe Tom Telesco goes after another corner, which I think they really haven't had that shutdown type of corner that they drafted since Jason Verrett, but remember, he couldn't stay healthy.
Kirk Morrison is with us. He was drafted in the 2005 draft out of San Diego State. I just was checking this out a little bit, Kirk. Not even the first Aztec linebacker selected in that draft. Did you know that, Kirk? Matt McCoy went ahead of you, right?
Yeah, pick 63. Yeah,
he went ahead of you. Channing Crowder was the linebacker pick just ahead of you by the Dolphins, another brilliant pick by them. but here's my question. When you're sitting there watching that, you worked out against all of these guys, combines. You probably had a pretty good idea of what everybody could do.
Right.
How frustrating, how tough to sit there and see other guys from your position that you knew you were as good as or better, yet they weren't calling your name yet.
Yeah, and that's the part that you have to realize, that it's not really, you know, what you've done. It's really, you know, kind of the flavor that that team likes. You know, are you a fit for what they do? And, you know, I had to wait my turn. And, you know, I'm really good friends with a lot of the guys who were taken before me. You know, one of my buddies was Lofa Tatupu. He got drafted in the second round of Seattle. He ended up being the starting middle linebacker on the trip to the Super Bowl for Seattle. You know, my buddy Matt McCoy, like you mentioned, he got drafted in Philadelphia, and, you know, it never really panned out for him, and he wasn't there much long because the system kind of changed. And remember, their defensive coordinator at the time, I'm sorry, the linebacker coach at the time, ends up leaving to take Steve Spagnuolo, takes the defensive coordinator position with the Giants, who ended up beating the Patriots a couple years after. So it's a lot of movement within that. And for me, where I got selected, that was just perfect for me. I was in a situation where I knew the defense, I knew the coaches really well, and I had an opportunity early on to start, and I really took that baton and held on to it for, you know, many years. So that's what I always tell players. It's you can be upset, you know, where you're drafted at, but getting drafted is actually the easy part. The hard part is sticking around, and I know a lot of linebackers and players can tell you how hard it is to really stick around.
Yeah, I think even a lot of the kids, I mean, who are drafted don't realize that the work starts after your name is announced.
Right. Yeah.
That's when you really have to buckle down because, I mean, these guys in the NFL don't mess around. If you don't come in ready to play and making plays, they're not going to wait around for you. So,
yeah, that's the way it is, man. I mean, the minute they draft you, the scouting department's job is to, the minute they draft you, their job is to replace you. That's just the way the scouting game goes.
Have fun watching the Sharks and the Golden Knights tomorrow night. I'll be right there watching that game as well, Kirk. That's fun. That's sports.
That's fun. That's playoff.
That is sports. Game 7, man, laying it all out on the line. And then have fun watching the draft Thursday, too.
All right, sounds good. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, man. Remember, there's some value.
Oh, yes,
Friday,
I know. That's
Saturday
right. It's
well.
3 days. Forgive me for not blocking off the whole 3 days for the draft.
Thanks, Kirk.
Always a pleasure catching up with you, buddy.
All right, fellas. No problem.
Thank
Talk
you.
To you soon.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
Will has to correct me. It's my kicking muscle is not the digitorus, it's the digitorum. Okay.
Oh, so. Thank you, Will.
Thank you, Will.
Yeah, just making sure we got that.
Our kinesiologist.
Yes.
Number 5.
All right, yesterday, I've been watching some baseball. Like, not just Padre baseball, but random baseball, like the Dodgers and Brewers on a Sunday morning type of baseball. And one thing that I hate watching is a game with the hitter in the shadow and the pitcher in the sun, because it's hard to watch on TV and I just hate it. So it's not the Big Five question. But later in the day, I saw a Washington Post.
I can inform you that hitters don't like hitting in that either.
I'm sure they don't, because this is why it's being said. A Washington Post article came out, and Nationals players were complaining about the shadows at Marlins Park. Nationals pitcher or player Adam Eaton said, quote, "It's a health thing. Max Scherzer got hit in the dugout because he can't even see the pitch when you're on deck or in the dugout. I just don't see how that's a good idea. You heard through the grapevine that they did it last Sunday, and players were kind of against it. And like I said, I think it's more of a safety thing than anything else. You saw a lot of swing and misses. Kind of a sense of not seeing the ball well," end quote. I'm curious to why Tony is laughing, but this game started at 1:10 p.m. Eastern, and the roof was open at Marlins Park, which could have been closed. So, Chris, do you think Major League Baseball needs to take to... do you think Major League Baseball needs to take game times and shadows into account?
Who said that quote?
Adam Eaton.
Adam Eaton.
And what time did he start that quote? Like 9 a.m.? That was about a 2 hour
quote. I believe it was after. Yeah. Are you saying that I read slowly?
I think he's dogging your reading of the quote.
There was just so much stuff in that quote, I couldn't gather it all in.
Okay.
Does baseball need to change the time of game so that there's never a shadow on the field?
A shadow that hurts, like... pretty much pitcher and batter in the same
shadows. I get it, Scraby. I've seen a baseball game before.
I don't know.
I have watched a couple of games. No, baseball should not do this. In a perfect world, there would never be a shadow. But guess what? The elements are hardly a part of baseball, not to the degree that football, they're the part of the game. But yeah, you got to deal with the wind. You got to deal with the sun on fly balls. And unfortunately, you got to deal with those shadows if you're in the batter's box once in a while. It doesn't happen all the time. So tough it out.
Tony was laughing. So what do you think, Tony?
I'm sure he hates it.
I think they should, like, they've done for the fans. They put the big net up. They should put one right in front of the dugout, too. So you should just, all you have to do from now on is just kind of open the little hole in the fence and then walk through. That way, all the players are protected from this health scare.
Yes.
That could happen.
It was a health scare.
From shadow.
Is that what Adam said?
He said it's a health thing.
Health thing. Because Max couldn't see the ball, I guess, from the bench because of the shadow. So
guess how many people can't see the ball when Max is throwing it? Probably quite a few.
The funny thing about it is this probably took place on a Sunday as the trip.
It did, yesterday.
As the series ended. You know who collectively bargained so that there could be no more, like, late games on travel days? The players did.
Right.
So
they get more of these day games.
You get more of these day games, and then guess what? If the Marlins decide to open their roof because for once it's not raining in Miami, they can get some sun on the field, they're probably going to do that. And, oh, by the way, you might have some shadows, by the way. I just think it's a little rich, asking for now the times to be changed simply because of shadows. I remember Ben Sheets in Milwaukee. Striking out like 20. You remember, you think those Braves guys could see anything in that shot? They saw, they were swinging before the ball even came out of his hand.
I don't know if you've seen the old footage, Tony.
Of Qualcomm?
Way back when the World Series games were all played in the daytime.
Yeah. I can even take you to that 98 season here where Sterling Hitchcock was just tricking everybody
mowing
with the split.
The Braves
Guess
down.
What? They probably couldn't see either because there were shadows that day. So shadows been a part of baseball as long as I can remember. I would hate to see rules being changed simply because of shadows.
Well, it's not a good look for
but
TV.
But just for Adam Eaton, every single game should start at midnight so we don't ever have to worry about it.
I had no idea that this was going to be the hottest topic in a Big Five
It's only a hot topic because literally for as long as I can remember watching baseball games, there's been shadow. And this is the first I've ever heard that it's a health thing. This is the first I've ever
health
heard
health scare.
We need to get the CDC involved.
Holy.
Number four.
Golden State Warriors coach Steve Kerr believes Russell Westbrook's handling of the media could lead to problems down the line. The Oklahoma City guard has refused to answer questions from Barry Trammell of the Oklahoma. Here is the exchange that Steve Kerr was asked about.
Yeah, Russell, Barry Trammell with the Oklahoma. You guys did a great job on Lillard in the first half. He didn't score until the last 75 seconds of the half. Were you pleased with the defense you played on him, and how did it change when he got going in the third quarter?
It's a good question. Not sure.
That's so he's having a feud with this columnist.
Yes, it's been
he's having a feud for a couple years now. It has been, and Steve Kerr was asked about it, and he said, "I'm afraid to read this quote because it might be too long." But
well, how long is it?
It's pretty long. Quote: "I just feel that we have to be very careful as a league. We're in a good place right now. Very popular. Fans love the game, the social dynamic, the fashion. But more than anything, they love the connection they feel to the players. I think it's important for the players to understand that it's a key dynamic to this league. I think this is a healthy dynamic for this league, for any player, any team, any local media, any national media," end quote. Tony, do you think an NBA head coach should be talking about another player in the media like this?
Well, I won't directly answer that because I don't know what the question was that was posed to Steve Kerr.
Good point.
The question could have been generally speaking, not specifically about Russell Westbrook.
I believe it was about Russell Westbrook in the situation.
Well, the answer doesn't say that he's talking specifically about Russell Westbrook. He's talking in general terms. He's talking about the relationship between media and player. But I'll answer your question. In general terms, no. Coaches shouldn't speak about players that are not their own. But Steve Kerr has a point here. And although Russ actually changed up his answer, because prior to that game, the answer was next question. So he actually changed it up this week. But the real issue, I think, isn't a league issue. Because who else is having beefs with reporters? We haven't heard, other than Kevin Durant, those two, and it affects them individually. Nobody's looking at the NBA now like, oh, these guys don't want to give us access.
Oh, hang on a second. We can't watch the Bucks game tonight because Russell Westbrook is having a feud with this writer in Oklahoma. Who cares?
Right. It hurts them maybe individually because people will start thinking of them as, you know, not wanting to speak or things of that nature. But I don't think it's as deep as Steve Kerr maybe signaling, and that's why I said I would love to have heard the question that was asked to him.
Do you know that Michael Jordan got put on the cover of Sports Illustrated in a baseball uniform, swinging and missing a pitch, with the headline "Bag It, Michael" in 1994?
I remember that.
Do you know that he didn't talk to Sports Illustrated again till never? He never spoke to Sports Illustrated again.
That's crazy.
Because of that headline. No, it's not crazy. And I think if this guy from the Oklahoman rubbed Russell Westbrook the wrong way or reported something wrong, shut him down.
I am debating. Okay, we're just going to go for it.
Go for it.
Steve Kerr actually was joking about handling future press conferences with, quote, "next question." Then he got serious and he said, "I think it's dangerous for the league."
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think Steve is blowing it out of proportion, and maybe he's specifically talking about it hurts Russell Westbrook in the league, but it certainly isn't. I mean, it hasn't changed anybody from watching these games.
And I'd like these reporters to be held accountable.
And I don't know
if they treat these players poorly.
And in all fairness, I don't know what the reporter has done to irritate Russell Westbrook. But I think now, if all the players started doing this, then it's a danger to the league at that point. But it's just one, two guys. And KD isn't really saying next question. He's just going hard in the paint whenever you ask him a question.
He really is. All right, let's go to 3-2, and then we're going to stop at 1. Cut Thomas.
Number 3. Number 2. Number 1.
The Big 5 is quickly becoming the Big 2.
Well, today. Maybe we'll revisit it later. But anyway, former Philadelphia Eagles quarterback legend Donovan McNabb never was able to win a championship for the Eagles, but he was able to get to one on a sports talk show in Philadelphia. McNabb said that if Carson Wentz isn't able to get some wins in the playoffs in the next 2 or 3 years, then it's time to move on from him. Here is McNabb on CBS Sports Radio's Zach Gelb show.
I'm thinking the next two years or so, he has to find a way to get in the second round or out of the second round of the playoffs. And I think personally, if he can't get out of the second round in the next two years, to be honest with you, if he can't get out of the second round, they should look to possibly draft another quarterback because you just don't know about his durability.
And if you know anything about Twitter, what do you think happened to Donovan McNabb on Twitter?
They went to roasting.
Yes, Eagles fans are pretty ticked off about this and have attacked him on Twitter. But Chris, do you agree with Donovan McNabb that they might need to look for a new quarterback in the next 2 or 3 years, if Carson Wentz can't win a championship?
I don't know.
No, that's not what he said.
Yeah, if Carson Wentz can't
get to the second round or whatever. Yeah. Yes, because I think any quarterback that can't win a playoff game or get to the second round needs to be, you have to consider replacing them. I mean, that's the whole idea of the sport, is to be successful and then be successful again come postseason. And it does need to be remembered that Nick Foles was the guy who was the success in the postseason, not Carson Wentz. So he's got to prove it.
Tony?
Maybe he said it wrong, but what he's saying is correct, I think. I agree with Chris on this. We're talking about Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia. We know the expectations there.
Yeah, they're all mad at Donovan McNabb now, but what if Carson Wentz loses a playoff game?
Just getting ready to say that. Two, three years down the line, I promise you, somebody has screenshotted those same tweets at Donovan McNabb, and they will come back up again if Carson Wentz hasn't got out in the out of the second round.
Yes, it will.
That's a fact.
Yes.
So, to answer your question, I think Donovan is right. Maybe he could have been said it nicer, but that's the reality of Philadelphia.
And once again, somebody answers a question honestly, and everybody gets mad at them for answering it honestly.
All right, we have a minute for one extra one. Over the weekend, Damian Lillard.
The ones that we already had going?
Right. But we just don't have time for all of them. Anyway, Damian Lillard and Russell Westbrook, they are getting into it on the court, and it's getting a little crazy. But who do you guys think is the better point guard, Damian Lillard or Russell Westbrook, Tony?
Right now, Dame Lillard is. He's doing more for his team when it counts the most. I mean, his assist performance yesterday when he started the game not playing that well, only had like 3 points, 4 points through the first, quarter or so. That was a great performance. And right now, I hate to say it because Russell Brody Westbrook is my guy. He's getting outplayed right now. It's plain and simple. I mean, Russell's not getting very much help from Paul George, although he did last night. It's been a tale of two teams with two superstars. One set of superstars playing well together, the other is not.
Chris, what do you think?
I think in general, Russell Westbrook will always be considered to be a better point guard than Damian Lillard.
Yeah,
but this week, Damian Lillard's better than he is. And he was last night. He was plus 16 on the floor, and Westbrook was minus 17. And Damian Lillard's team won on the road to pretty much wrap up the series. So
indeed.
I got to give Lillard the nod. But I think if we all sit here around a, off-season campfire, Russell Westbrook will be considered the better quarterback. Our point guard.
Touché.
Or quarterback, too, for all it's worth. Scraby's giving signals again. Look out.
We're just going to recap everything that happened over the weekend next.
5 o'clock rewind. 5 o'clock rewind.
We own the NBA.
Haven't gotten the NBA. We're getting to it next. Stay tuned.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Gwen and Chris wanted to rank things, and that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
All right, what do we got today? Tony Gwynn Jr.? This is not my category.
Say my category either, but that's okay.
All right.
We have top five worst NFL draft picks since 2000.
Since 2000.
So that
leaves Ryan Leaf out because he was 1998.
Ryan Leaf is not eligible for this draft.
So that means that we could come up with somebody different than... Because if we would have done this thing with all draft choices, it would just be Ryan Leaf, 1 through 5. I mean, that's kind of the whole story of bad draft choices.
Why don't you go first?
You want me to go first?
Yes.
Number five for me.
Number five.
I have to wait for the signal. Joey Harrington, number 3 overall pick of the Lions in 2002 out of the University of Oregon. Joey Harrington was a, I would say, bad to mediocre quarterback. Like when he was at his best, he was mediocre. But he was usually not at his best. 79 touchdowns, 85 INTs. Only one season in his career did he throw more TDs than picks. Joey Harrington, number five.
My number five is a guy that I was rooting to get into the AFL and do big things.
Yeah.
Johnny Manziel. He'll fall at number five, number 22 pick overall in 2014 out of Texas A&M. Do I need to explain any more about
Not
Johnny?
Really.
I think you guys are pretty familiar with him.
Johnny Football.
Well, he's no, no, no. I'm about to say, it's not Johnny. It's John
Football.
It's John Football.
No. John Football. Has any? Well, I wouldn't say he's the only one, but he's one of the handful of people that have made a name for himself for just being a disaster. That's himself. That's hard to do.
It is true.
Number four for me. You'll remember this guy. He was the number one pick overall in the NFL draft in 2007. He quarterbacked LSU to a national title. He quarterbacked the Raiders into the abyss. Jamarcus Russell, number four. 25 starts is all he made in his career. 18 touchdowns, 48 turnovers, including 25 fumbles in his career in the NFL, which wasn't too long.
Yeah, it was a disaster.
Yeah.
Number four for me, another guy who actually starred in the AAF. Trent Richardson.
Wow.
Running back out of Alabama.
Okay.
Third overall 2012. This dude was a monster at Alabama. Like
monster.
Running through people's faces in the end zone all the time. And then he got to the NFL and just looked like he didn't know how to find the hole. Like it just seemed like he was constantly running into pileups. And at first, you were like, okay, the line's obviously bad. But with the next year, when it kept happening, it's like, bro, you got to find the actual opening in the line. You can't just run into the pile.
But at Alabama, if you ran into the pile, it still moved
it was a
forward
hole, right?
10 yards.
Number three.
Number three for me was the very first pick of this century. Number one choice of the 2000 NFL draft out of Penn State, defensive lineman Courtney Brown. Who?
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly why he's on the list.
He was a first overall pick.
Courtney Brown, and he was taken by the Browns.
Oh.
That makes perfect sense now.
Yes. Now, somebody should have explained to the Browns, just because you're the Browns doesn't mean you have to take a guy named Brown.
Or somebody should have explained to Courtney, like, hey, man, if I was you, I would do my best to get out of being drafted by Cleveland.
Yeah, get a speeding ticket or something.
It doesn't work out well for you.
One of those things where Penn State had two linebackers that year. One was Courtney Brown. The other was LeVar Arrington. Browns kind of made a mistake.
Indeed they did.
Yeah.
What was that, three?
Mm-hmm.
Number three for me. You guys remember this guy, Charles Rogers. Michigan State wide receiver.
I will remember him.
Went to Detroit.
He's my number two, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm jumping ahead, so go ahead.
All kinds of bad pick here, right? Second overall.
All kinds of bad
2003. This coincided, if I'm not mistaken, with a few bad years in a row taking draft picks for
Lions.
Detroit Lions.
So, and all bad wide receivers, weren't they?
Yeah, Matt Millen was the GM there for a while, and he drafted,
I think, Mike Williams was not too long after this. It might have been right before this. I can't remember.
It didn't work out.
Out of USC, and they just...
Wasn't there a receiver? Roy Williams? Yeah, that guy, too.
Roy. I mean, at least he was a serviceable wide receiver. Like, he played in the league for a little bit of time. Charles Rogers one was just all bad. All bad.
Number two.
All right, my number two was Charles Rogers, as I said, and I'll just add a little bit to what Tony said. He was out of Michigan State. He set all kinds of records there, went to the hometown Lions. They were all excited. His whole career, he played only 14 games. But here's the stat that stands out on Charles Rogers and why he's number two. He caught four touchdowns in his career. He was suspended for substance abuse three times. So it was close.
He almost had.
If he could have just done one more substance abuse, he could have equaled his TD total.
If he could have just done one more substance abuse.
By the way, I'm sure he did probably do another substance abuse. They just chose to catch him only three times.
Number two for me is fresh out of the state of Texas, Mr. Vince Young.
Oh,
he has to fall number two
one.
Because he was like the greatest college football player of all time.
God, he was good.
And everybody anticipated him going to the NFL and just doing well. And he had signs where he did very well that 1 year he got to play.
Didn't he
a couple years
the
he got
Titans
to play
to the playoffs?
He did.
Time?
He did.
Yeah.
But for all of the hype that you got for the third overall pick in 2006, certainly didn't turn out as we stopped.
I always felt a little bad for Vince Young because I think he had a lot of
bad people around him.
That, and he had a lot of depression issues and a lot of issues like that that a lot of people don't understand very well and want to just rip on a guy for, but sometimes those are very tough to deal with.
I
think he had trouble dealing with them, and I think it hurt him as a professional.
Yeah, I've read up a lot about Vince Young and the people that are around him making him make terrible decisions because he wanted to look cool in front of his friends, spending maybe $20,000 at a Cheesecake Factory, and then using alcohol and drugs to mask the pain of being an NFL draft bust.
$20,000 at Cheesecake Factory.
Hey, was that the number? I knew it was up there.
That's a lot of cheesecake.
Yeah, but
number one.
My number one wrecked a franchise for at least 10 years, I would say. He was the very first pick of this franchise. He was the very first pick of the 2000 draft. He was terrible. He was David Carr from Fresno State. The Houston Texans really didn't become a good team for like a whole decade because they opened with David Carr. His brother isn't a whole lot better at the moment, by the way.
I like
Oakland.
I like David as an analyst, though. Does a good job on NFL Network.
Hair is on point.
Hair is always on point. And that mustache is strong. I'm just saying.
It is.
Number one on my list, you already named him, Jamarcus Russell.
Okay.
I mean, this guy could throw a football from his knees 80 yards.
Yeah.
But could not read an offense and love food like myself. So, not a good combo.
Bad combo.
Bad studier, big eater. Doesn't usually work out well.
Who else threw 80 yards from their knees? Wasn't there
I think Josh Allen. The
Josh
Bills.
Allen did it too, yeah. Josh Allen actually finished up last season all right.
He did.
Giving a little hope to some people in Buffalo.
He actually ended up winning the trash talking war with our guy, Jalen Ramsey.
Well,
remember in the beginning of the year,
Jalen made it interesting.
He did.
You remember
did.
In the beginning of the year when we played Jalen, or we talked about Jalen saying that Josh Allen was trash, and then we played the clip of Josh Allen. He sounded like he was going to cry. Different guy from the beginning of the year to the end of the year.
It's called, it's called maturity.
Guys, I told you guys when I saw that guy on the sidelines at Wyoming against the Aztecs, he made plays that I hadn't seen too many quarterbacks make. Josh Allen can do some things. And did some things last year.
The countdown is
all right, there
now
we go.
Closed.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
All right, let's move on. Talk a little back to the NBA. Joining us from Sporting News, Mr. Joe Morgan covers the Clippers and joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Joe, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. Sunny Los Angeles is good to me. How's everything going with you guys?
We're doing just
can't complain
fine.
Too much.
I'm sure you get confused with the former manager of the Boston Red Sox all the time.
There's a Hall of Fame baseball player that A lot better than me. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what I was kind of joking about that. Yeah, the other Joe Morgan. All right, the Clippers won that huge game in Game 2 in this series. And, it might be the best game of the playoffs so far. Unfortunately, it's, a series, and you have to find a way to win four. And as well coached as the Clippers are, talent's going to win out, and it looks like that's the case here.
Yeah, I mean, this is the NBA, and at the end of the day, in the NBA, stars win. That's what wins playoff series. And nobody expected the Clippers to beat Golden State coming into this series. But I think the key point is nobody expected them to really be in this position to begin with.
Right.
Even myself, I didn't pick them to be in the postseason at the beginning of the year. And for them to get in and then win that game at Oracle in Oakland, I was there. It was unbelievable. The largest comeback in the history of the postseason play, I think really validates their season in general. I think to get that win, to show the fight that this team has, without an all-star on the team, no superstars, wasn't incredible in its own right. But as you kind of said, look, there's just too much talent on this Golden State team. We saw it last night. Curry had an off night. Durant and Clay go off. I expect them to probably wrap it up in five or maybe six. But the Clippers find a way to win two would be almost miraculous, in my opinion.
Joe, because of these circumstances that we're talking about, obviously you're going up against the mighty Golden State Warriors. I want to focus on this free agency because clearly with the season that the Clippers have had, as well as, the showing they've put together, even if it only goes five games against the Warriors, would seemingly put them in a pretty good spot coming free agency with a bunch of really good players to pick from. How are the Clippers feeling about this going into this offseason?
Well, by all accounts, they're feeling pretty good, yeah. And they should. I'll just say this, guys. I'm from L.A., okay? I've spent most of my life here. I have never had the Clippers be in the conversation with the Lakers as kind of the hot it team in L.A., and that's what's going on right now. With all the turmoil that's happening with the Lakers, the Clippers are that steady organization with some really smart people at the top.
Who would have thunk it?
It's incredible. It's been tough to see. And I think that game two win, I do think players see that.
Yeah.
And you see a team that is fighting and able to come back like that from 31 with Doc Rivers that the players love. Jerry West is right there with an owner that everybody seems to really like. I think the Clippers are in prime position to land one, if not two, superstars. We've heard a lot about Kawhi Leonard. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with him. And, if Toronto somehow finds a way to make it to the finals, it'd be hard for me to see him leaving. But with that being said, a lot of people think he's going to be a Clipper and doesn't want to play with LeBron or be a Laker. So for the first time in, forever, the Clippers are a destination franchise, which is pretty exciting.
Joe, I want to ask you a little bit about the logo, Jerry West. How much involvement does he have with the front office? Obviously, he has been a great executive throughout his career, but there were pieces in place when he came on board. How does he factor in to decision-making as it goes with the front office?
Yeah, it's a good question. I can't give you exact details. All I know is that now that he's here, things have changed.
Mm.
And the Clippers have surrounded themselves with smart people. I think this is something that we're seeing across the league where there's a handful of smart guys making decisions. The Lakers haven't necessarily had that. It's been, it was Pelinka and Magic, and that was about it. The Clippers have a brain trust of people that are making these calls. And when Jerry West suddenly shows up and you're able to go from Lob City era, right, which was a bit of a disappointment,
yeah,
and then trading away all of those players, and in less than a year, you're suddenly where you are now, is amazing. And I think Jerry West needs to get a lot of credit for that, though there are a handful of guys who are making a big impact for the Clippers.
Joe Morgan, Sporting News, covers the Clippers, joining us. Talk a little NBA hoops here. I do want to follow up on what Tony asked about the free agency situation, because even though I 100% agree with you and 100% agree with Tony, I guess I grew up in L.A. and I lived there for so long that it's really tough for me to believe that the Clippers would ever surpass the Lakers in any way, shape, or form. Even if the Clippers, with this season and the Lakers' disappointment, isn't it still fair to say that the Clippers will always bat second in that town?
I,
it's not fair. I'll say that. Yes, look, this is a Lakers town because of a couple of reasons. One, obviously, the championships, the winning. It's been going on, you know, for as long as we can remember. And two, the Lakers are kind of a sexy team, right? They have the celebrities, and everybody's going to those games. But I think as we're seeing now in the NBA, I'm not sure players care as much about that. They almost care more about the location and the future of an organization. And I think people are starting to realize, hey, the Clippers are in L.A. too. It's 75 on the Clippers side of the locker room just as much as the 75 on the Lakers side. So, and I think with where they're going and the leadership that they have, I think there's a real opportunity for them to, I'm not going to say surpass. I don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
But at least become equal partners, if you will, in L.A. alongside the Lakers. And winning trumps everything. If, you know, the LeBron era and with the Lakers doesn't produce championships, and suddenly the Clippers, you know, they get a guy and they're going to Western Conference Finals. Players look at that kind of stuff, and they're going to decide, I want to go win rings, and if that happens to be the Clippers, then so be it.
Joe, I got to ask about Patrick Beverley a little bit. I'm not sure what his contract situation is moving forward, but has he proven himself to be a piece that, you know, could run a team and be a point guard on a team that can get deep into the playoffs? Because listen, his work really all season long has been pretty impressive. I know he's had some injuries, been nicked up a little bit, but it's hard to argue that he's not the heart and soul of this basketball team.
Oh, he's everything. Patrick Beverley embodies what this Clippers team is. You saw it, actually. I thought it was incredible. In game two in that comeback, they were down, you know, it was in the low 20s or whatever it was, and Beverley is still clapping and yapping and talking away with Durant. And I didn't really get it at the time when I saw it. I was like, what is he doing? You know, I mean, they're down 25. And after the game, Doc said it was basically all him in that huddle, saying, we're not going to lose this game. He is a bulldog. He's everything. He wanted Kevin Durant. That was all him. I don't know if he's necessarily a guy that's going to run your team. You know, I think they've Shai Gilgeous-Alexander there, and he is the future. But Pat Beverley has made this Clippers team, along with Montrezl Harrell, my dad.
Yeah.
Has made this team what they are. He deserves a lot of credit for him. I think he's an unbelievable player. And defensively, I think Doc said it a couple times. You know, he's a Hall of Fame defensive player if there was such a thing, right? So he's been incredible.
Another guy is incredible, really, to me, is Doc Rivers. I mean, I don't think we can totally overlook him. And I'm curious, does Doc understand where he sits kind of in the pantheon of NBA coaches? He's already led the Celtics to a championship. Were he to ever lead the Clippers to a championship?
My God.
Right? You'd have to start really considering Doc Rivers, because, first of all, he was a great player in his own right, et cetera, played in a lot of big ball games. But as a coach, he is kind of not looked upon as the Popovich.
Right.
But if he could do this with the Clippers one day, they might have to change their thinking on Doc Rivers.
Yeah, I agree. It's been up and down for him. I've actually somebody who has questioned in the past, you know, because there's been some of those teams with the Clippers were the Lob City years were disappointing. And he wins that ring with Boston in 2008, and then he comes here to LA, and there were some up and down years. But the coaching job that he's done with this team in particular, I think he could be coach of the year. I don't think he's going to win it, but he's top three. I think Coach Buzz in Milwaukee end up getting it. But if there was a guy who deserves it, it's Doc Rivers and everything that he's done with his team. As I mentioned before, to not have a superstar, and in the West, more importantly, when you're in the 6th, 7th kind of seed there for a while, they obviously dropped to the 8th seed at the end of the year. But to have your team competing for a high playoff spot with the roster that, you know, isn't going to fire anybody up at the end of the day, right? If you look at that team before the year, you didn't think they were going to do anything. Doc Rivers has had, in my opinion, the coaching year of his career. This is his best job. I think he's now starting to finally get the recognition. Those 2008 years, people said that was the big three. He had all the talent. He doesn't have all the talent this year. This is his best job. I think moving forward, people are going to really start appreciating and realizing that.
Joe Morgan joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Joe, one quick question. I started to ask you, is there something to the fact that this team, this Clipper team with no stars, has been the better team, or at least not as disappointing as the Lob City team. But you referred back to the Celtics team. They had plenty of stars. Is it something about the right kind of star that Doc usually seems to get going in a different way? Because obviously those guys in Boston were different monsters. I mean, Garnett, Grinder, Pierce, Grinder. I don't know if you'd say that about the squad that he had in Lob City, but you would certainly say that about this squad that he has this year.
Yeah, I think the Lob City years were interesting, to say the least. There was some squabbling that was going on between the teammates. It just wasn't necessarily a great fit. Not everything works out.
Right.
Right? And Chris Paul was a handful. He always has been. Obviously, it's worked everywhere he goes, but he's not always that easy to deal with. And so it just didn't work out there. I think this team fits Doc's personality more than anything.
Right.
Doc's a grinder. He wants to come in. He wants to do the work. He wants guys that are willing to put in the work. I can't say that the Lob City era didn't want to do that. I don't know. But I can tell you one thing, that every guy on this Clippers team now comes in, they put in the work. A lot of them feel like they're not appreciated to the level where they think they should be. And he's turned them into a team that, in my opinion, in the next 2 to 3 years will be the best team in L.A. And there's guys on this team right now, including Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who I think are going to be pretty big players in the NBA moving forward.
Joe, great stuff. Appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of this series as long as it lasts, and enjoy a good offseason with the Clippers. It should be a fun one. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.